Now it's time for Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer, but today it's without Tom Clammer. My name is Jeff Humfeld. I'm producer of Jaws of Justice Radio on Monday mornings, and I'm sitting in for Tom today, and we have a pretty interesting show today. We have two guests today. Richard Mabian is president of the Kansas City, Kansas. Newly elected president of the Kansas City, Kansas NAACP.
Thank you, sir.
And Cedric Patton, who is a past president and a first vice president at this point. Welcome to both of you.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here. Seemed like I was just here a few minutes ago, but I'm back again.
We're only a few days removed from Groundhog's Day, so maybe there's a lingering effect here. We're going to talk to Cedric first, and I do like his sweatshirt today.
Got the laborers on.
He's got his laborers sweatshirt on, and I'm wearing my carpenter's sweatshirt. So
I'm the only oddball in here.
I just retired from 30 years with Unified Government, and I was the first vice president of 1290 PE, which is the public employee sector of 1290. Laborer, so I'm still a proud laborer, even though I'm retired.
Yeah. Y'all, yeah. Does a union person ever retire?
No.
No.
Never.
The struggle, never. You're exactly right. And looking what's happening in the legislature on both sides of the line here, we got a lot of work to do.
Yes.
But anyway, Cedric, why don't you give us a little bit of history on the chapter over in Kansas City, Kansas. We were talking a little bit before the show, and you said that originally it was a Kansas City chapter for both sides of the line. And
that's correct.
They split and formed their own chapters. And that was just, a little while ago.
Yes. We've had, both chapters are now 100 years old. We received our plaques from the national office at the convention in, 2 years ago? Well, we got our plaques, and so now we're both celebrating 100 years of fighting for justice and equality, not only on the Missouri side, but on the Kansas side, too. I would like to say that there are 5 branches in the Kansas City area, that being Kansas City, Missouri, Kansas City, Kansas, Bonner Springs, Johnson County, and Olathe. And each one has their unique style of doing what they do, but the whole ballpark figure is fighting for equal rights and equal justice.
Why don't you tell us some of the things? I mean, over the years, 100 years is a long time, of course, and we think back to all the groundbreaking things that have happened over those years. What are some of the things you think are most significant that your chapter was involved in?
I know we were involved in a lot of the voting rights in 1963, 1964. That's probably been one of the most, along with the organization as a whole. We have protested desegregation to desegregate the Kansas City, Kansas public schools. We protested to desegregate the police department, the fire department, and Kansas City, Kansas as a whole. I remember back in 66, I was a little tot. We were walking on a picket line, my mom and my brother and my 3 sisters, along with a lady that's passed on, Viola Gatson, and her 5 kids. We were out there picketing in the morning, and then we picketed that afternoon. So, being on a picket line is no stranger to me, but that's one thing that I think that a lot of people need to get back on, and I really applaud those who protest nowadays. Nonviolent protests are the key to getting your statement and whatever you want done across.
Okay, we're going to take just a quick break here, and we are back to Tell Somebody, right, and our guest, Cedric Patton, Vice President of the Kansas City, Kansas NAACP, and the newly elected President Richard Mabian.
Thank you. Well, when you were asking him questions about what had they accomplished in the last 100 years, of course, I thought he was going to start out with, we got Richard as a president. That would have been a great accomplishment right there. But then when he started talking about some of the accomplishments, and he talked about him as a youngster being out there walking on the picket line in 66, I kind of slipped back in my seat, because in 1966 I was out there in the Vietnam conflict. So I'm just telling you a little bit about the ages that's floating around here. I was no longer considered a youngster, at least not the way he was talking about. I was out there defending this country. So, I mean, it's been some time. I'm a person that feels that the NAACP has an important role in this country, and I think that, especially now up under my leadership, we're going to try to see if we can expand into an area that gives us more of a multicultural visibility. I'm very concerned about that, because the issues now are people issues. You know, our racial issues have become people issues. Yes, we still have racial issues, but the same kind of concepts and things that we're going through as a race of people, the American public going through as human race. And I think this is an ample opportunity for one of these organizations to take the lead in that role. And I really think the NAACP is one of the most organized groups to be able to foster such a leadership, that mainly because of their history and their past, and it would do so much for healing this country. We fought this racial battle for a long time, you know, and now it's time for us to fight this human race battle that we got on hands out here.
This is one of the things too, is that the economic situation that we're facing, and the disparity between the very super rich and
yes,
everybody else, makes it clear that the division isn't really, divisions in this country really aren't race. They're class, or their income, or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And I think that, you know, a lot of people don't realize that the NAACP always was an integrated organization.
They don't know it, because most of the time, Jeff, when we were fighting for our rights and our freedom, when we were, it was a racial thing. And I'm not going to take away the fact that we still have racial problems. We still do. I mean, that's been obvious here in the last 4 to 6 months, with all of the police brutality and the things that's going on with our young people out here in the streets. It's still a factor, and that would cause it to seem like it was focusing in on race. But I'm saying that our young people and their tendency to disregard life is now a human race issue. And we need to be able to stand together in solidarity, just like the union. We should learn from the unions. That thing about solidarity, I think, is very important in life right now. And I think it would behoove us to adopt a solidarity stance as far as the issues that we're dealing with in life. You know, the I don't want to make the police brutality a racial thing, but then it has a tendency to be sidetracked. If we make the police brutality a human race issue, you just don't treat other human beings that way. Then we got to deal with it. They can't just keep pushing it off, okay? I mean, that's just a pure, simple fact. I was in a session. We had a meeting this week, Tuesday, and we had an incident over in Kansas City, Kansas, where a guy that was being arrested by the police and was fighting back and going through all the gyrations that people go through when they've been arrested by the police. Not everybody, but some folks. And he was in a situation where he started going, "I can't breathe." And this was after what had happened in New York. He was going, "I can't breathe. I can't breathe." You can hear it on the tape, okay? And they didn't stop, and he died, okay? And we had our meeting the other day, and you know, you can get mixed emotions about it, like he was fighting back, he's overweight, he shouldn't have been doing this and that. But a part came out of that discussion that, you know, if a person this day and age is saying, "I can't breathe," it would make sense to me. You got 6, 7, 8 cops standing around there, that maybe you back off just because of what has happened. You understand what I'm saying? So that's an issue that I think should be addressed, not as a black-white issue, as a human right issue. That if a person, I mean, because of this DNA, look, we've lost 2 people in the last 30 days or so, 60 days, they're saying, "I can't breathe," for the same reason, because of the force that was being applied trying to get them in handcuffs. You understand what I'm saying? We need to make this an American public issue, because that could be your child. That could be your nephew.
It could be your father.
Yes.
Or your brother.
Mm-hmm.
Cedric, I want to ask you a question. You mentioned being on the picket line, so to say, when you were young. And we've all seen what's happening, and some of us have been out there ourselves with the demonstrations and things that are happening now. Do you see some real differences between what you were doing when you were young and what's happening now? How their demonstrations are being put together? Who's putting them together? How they're doing what they're doing?
Most of the demonstrations that you've seen on the news here lately, you know, they tend to focus on the violent part of it, as opposed to the nonviolent part. And then again, that goes back to whichever station you watch or listen to. But the main concept of a nonviolent protest, you know, you go out, don't block the sidewalk, don't block the public access. And, you know, you have your little sign or your little chant or saying, and then you do your little protest. And then when you get finished, then, you know, if you get asked questions by the press or whoever, then, you know, you should have at least a talking point sheet to let them know, you know, why you're doing what you're doing. You know, one thing that I did like really is the Wall Street deal. You know, until it got to the point to where, you know, they didn't want to bring in the porta potties, they didn't want to do this, they didn't want to do that, to make it more comfortable for those who were protesting to get their point across on Wall Street. But, you know, and that lasted for days and weeks, and, you know, it went on and on and on, until finally, you know, the mayor just said, well, you know, enough is enough, clean them out. And, you know, that kind of, in a way, it kind of enhances those who want to do a protest. But now we look at what happened there, and then you build on that. But then you come up with ways to combat that. The protesters, okay, we'll go out and rent, you know, 50 porta potties, so they're there as long as the public officials, those who are in charge, will let us put them there. And of course they're going to tell you, well, they got to be so many feet from here, so many this and that. Well, what about those who shower? Well, those who shower can go home and shower and come back. You know, we have learned nowadays, I think, a rotation in protest. Like, you're standing in line, you know, Christmas, waiting for the Best Buy or whatever to open. I got to go to work. Somebody comes in, takes your place till you come off, and then you go back home, da da da. But, you know, if you're that organized group and you're going to do a round-the-clock protest, then, you know, you have the A shift, the B shift, and the C shift.
Yeah, I know where Cedric is on holidays. He's been down there in them lines, Best Buy.
No, not for a while.
let's get to some of the things that you guys are actually working on right now. You know, what's happening in around town, so to say.
Well, then that's going to come over into my era, so I can take that. I want to make the NAACP a respected organization again. In many ways, and I know this is going to tread on some people's toes, but the NAACP was formed as a spiritual group, and I want to get the spirituality back into it. I feel that we in our communities are lacking a moral voice, one that people look to, and our youngsters right now need that kind of leadership. And that was one of my installation promises to the group, is that we were going to become that moral voice for our Kansas City metropolitan area, to speak out and speak up and work toward providing that kind of leadership to our young people. I have a problem with the black on black crimes, and me and some of the others in the organizations are starting to pick up steams in that area, and we want to start a campaign towards addressing that issue. holding sessions for our young people to talk about the circumstances behind having to live that kind of life. That is one of the directions we go in. Another thing is to I ran on an environmental ticket. You know, in fact, Cedric is sitting here, and I told them I don't know a whole lot about the NAACP as far as leadership is concerned and history and all of that, but I know a lot about the environmental movement. So if they would allow me to exercise my environmental movement concepts into our organization, they would say they promised they would help me as far as the NAACP thing. So that's why Cedric is like bonded to me. You see me, you're going to see him somewhere close by. But heading in that direction is very important because there was an article out I just sent to a few of my people that says that in the food industry, they're starting to say Black Lives Matter too. And we need the same thing they did in Ferguson, because we got to make people understand that we got to start educating people on how to eat. I mean, that's, you know, this, our future generation can't continue to do what our present generations are doing. Healthcare, we can't afford it. As a nation of people, we cannot afford it. So that's one of the areas that I'm focusing in. I have three young ministers on their way over to Kansas City Garden this weekend. They're going to give them a good old tour and break down on raised beds and how to go about doing it. Because we had Joe Jennings, who those of you out there who may know Joe, but he donated a portion of his 8-acre farm to us so we can turn it into a NAACP community garden school. We got plenty of community gardens floating around out there, but we want a school because we want to be able to teach people how to put gardens in their backyard. You know, we got community gardens all over town, but I'm not seeing them springing up in people's backyards. And that's where we need to be able to focus in, especially in the inner city. The people can start growing food back there and show them how to do it. Get some raised beds, get some little fence, like old chicken wire fence they used to have, and put around those raised beds and grow them some tomatoes and some vegetables and some stuff like that. That's the direction that we're really going. And that's very new for us. As an organization, we do have a very active EJ department, Environmental Justice Department. It, like most Environmental Justice Department, even with the Sierra Club, focuses in more on your larger organization, closing coal fire plants, and that's what you'll find a lot of the EJ department in the NAACP doing. Also, they talk about those big issues, but I want us to focus in more on the people to people issues. I mean, you know, to have that kind of concept going with people as far as the gardens are concerned, I think that's a good direction for us to spearhead and take on as a main issue. There's no other black organization in the inner city that is working directly with folks on those subjects.
All right. You mentioned the Environmental Justice Committee within your group. One of the things that I know you've dealt with in the past and is an important thing because it deals with the health and all is the coal-powered plants.
Yes, sir.
And the fact that, you know, you've got a coal sitting there in Quindaro, you've got a coal-powered plant sitting right there. All that stuff comes down, that smoke comes down and stuff drifts out of there, and it affects the health of the individual, but right. Also the community.
Well, this is where I got to give a plug for the Kansas Sierra Club because, you know, with me being the first black board member, so you know I'm going to give them some props for that. But they were able to get that lawsuit with BPU, Board of Public Utilities, and to get an out-of-court settlement to cause them to, this year, 2015, they'll no longer be burning coal in those two Quindaro coal fire plants. And that is a victory. Even though we haven't got the press and the attention behind it, that is a major victory in Wyandotte County because those plants are going to switch over to natural gas. And that in itself is a blessing. So I'm really excited about that. I just had the our Sierra Club legislative representative voice here Monday. for Eco Radio. And you know, the state of Kansas has, or Obama has pushed this 30% reduction in emissions from coal fire plants. That's on now. It's already been approved. But the problem is, and this is very important, if you didn't hear this the other day, I'll repeat it now. Out of that 30%, your coal fire plant said the best they can do is they actually say 2-3% inside the fence line. So you got an inside the fence line, that's where the plan is. Outside the fence line, that's where most of your low income people live. They say they can get an emission reduction of 2-3% inside the fence line. That means that 25%+ is going to have to come from outside the fence line. Okay, so that's why the education needs to be there on what we can do as individuals to be able to help reduce those emissions that's coming out. Because if you don't, the one else is going to be down there in, on 14th and Truce over Wyandotte County down there on 5th and Quindaro, telling people how to reduce their emissions. So that's another area that we as an organization can get involved in from an environmental justice perspective.
One of the things, and this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the demonstrations and all the things that have been happening with the police and government in general and the way that they're treating the citizens, is this whole issue of incarceration nation. This is not just a crime and punishment issue. This is an economic issue also.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to the whole issue of economic justice. You know, are there some particular things that you guys are looking at trying to do or maybe things that you've done in the past that have kind of gone by the wayside and you want to bring back and say, you know, we need to put an emphasis on this again because we've kind of let it slip or other things have come to the fore. How do we address this issue of so many people in jail?
As Cedric's looking up the information that he wants to present, Jeff, you know how I feel about it. I mean, it's a big issue for us. It's a major issue for us. I think that we all have to specialize when we deal with particular issues. You know, I talk to you about that all the time. I have to lean and turn to organizations like the ones you have, Jaws of Justice, and those kinds of groups to help even act to give leadership to me as far as areas we can focus in on. That's something we need to deal with. Our prison populations are exploding. You know, education is down, and I mean, they got reports out that they determine how many jails they need to build when they by the education level of kids in the fourth grade in our inner city, something like that. The point about it, when you look at the nation's unemployment record as being 5.1. I was in a session with Brownback's budget director there Saturday before last, and he's claiming that Kansas has a 4.1 unemployment figure, one of the best unemployment figures in the nation. But yet still over in Wyandotte County, I'm sitting there looking at, I just got a report in, an annual report that showed that Wyandotte County has a 23.3% black male unemployment rate. That's a tragedy right there.
Sounds to me like somebody's messing with the figures. There's an old saying, Richard. There's lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Statistics. Well, what it is that when you go to Kansas and you're out in Garden City, they have a 0+ unemployment figure. They have to import. They are importing people in for jobs at Tyson, a meat factory out there. You got a lot of packing houses out there in that part of the state. I mean, they're doing great. I mean, I went out there for some sessions, and they're importing in workers from Africa and South America. They bypassing Wichita and Kansas City, where you have large populations of people of color in low-income communities. And so when they compare that zero base unemployment rate, and even when you put the one we got in Wyandotte County in there, or Sedgwick County in there, it still works us out to a 4.1% unemployment rate, man. It's unbelievable that we have that going in the state. So now, like you said, sure, there's lies and lies and lies, but there are also reasons for these things happening. And not that I expect them to do something special here in Wyandotte County to benefit our black unemployment rate, but I want it to be at least on the table when it's being discussed, you know, so we can figure out ways we can address that. More training, more education, that's going to head into our prison system, period, regardless of what kind of programs we come up with. If we're not getting the education out there to educate the future generation and find job placement, training and placement. We got plenty of training, but no placement.
I'm going to go back to Cedric, even though he's still thumbing through his papers.
Well, the NAACP has several policies on juvenile justice, where as it relates from that so-called, well, that called pipeline from education to the jailhouse, schools to jailhouse, and where that now, you know, there's been a study that I can tell you in the third, whether a third grader is going to go to jail or whether he's going to go to college and be a successful citizen. You know, we have several policies that we've enacted over the years dealing with or how to deal with, how to confront, how to combat, some suggestions to state, federal, and local school boards, police, law enforcement agencies on how they can bring the community together and deal with some of those issues. And they go from, you know, prisoner rehabilitation, indiscriminate use of firearms by police, you know, chokeholds. And then we even have a juvenile justice policy that started back in 1978, reaffirmed in 79, 80, 84, and 96. A lot of the policies came back in, you know, in the middle 70s, and, you know, over the years, branches can reaffirm that policy if they see that it's kind of gone to the side a little bit. And, you know, every branch, well, as a matter of fact, every unit, and when I say unit, the adult branches and all the youth units, every unit gets a copy of the resolutions that are passed at the National Convention, and it's up to that unit to implement any and all, depending on the size of the unit, resolutions.
All right, we're getting tight on our time here, so I want to mention something, and I think this is an area that an organization, local organizations like the NAACP, could really have an effect on this issue, and that is what's happened in this school-to-prison pipeline is that infractions of school rules by students are being deemed to be criminal offenses anymore, and these things are being handled by police rather than school administrators. And that's somewhere where I would think that that a group like the NAACP could go to the school district and say, wait a minute, you got to change this. We cannot do this.
Right, and it's just like prosecutors. You know, prosecutors nowadays want to prosecute everything under a felony. So by the time, you know, everybody in grade school, you know, everybody in grade school will have a felon if they commit any type of any infraction against anything.
You know, so, I have to say we have our hands full now, Jeff. I know our time is low.
Sure.
The youth themselves are creating some circumstances that are in dire need of help, and that's all I got to say.
Okay. Cedric wants to give a couple websites here.
I want to give you two websites to look at. Number one is NAACP.org, and that's the National's website. Basically, 90% of that is basically for the adults. And then for all youth and college people, it's NAACP.org/content/Maine.
We want to thank both Richard Mabian and Cedric Patton from the Kansas City, Kansas chapter of the NAACP for coming on.